Good morning, diners and travelers and drinkers and chef mavens and food groupies and all you other people out there listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Last week we brought you some of the excitement from the James Beard Awards in Chicago, and today we're going to actually bring you some interviews we had with
some more excitement. Some more exciting chefs who just happened to be around, not necessarily at the James Beard Awards themselves, but some of Chicago's top talks, as we'll call it.
Top talks. And we managed to squeeze in quite a lot of eating in the few days we
didn't
were there.
Didn't we? There was a little
drinking. We certainly did.
There was a little drinking in there, too, but we won't talk about that.
Right. And at the top of our list, I think a real discovery is Thomas Lutz.
Right. No, absolutely no question about it. His restaurant, 16 on the 16th floor of, let's be careful with the word, Trump Tower in Chicago, has the most amazing view. Absolutely incredible view.
And this is Chef Thomas Lentz. I think I misspoke.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, L-E-N-T-S.
Right. Yep.
Okay, good. Well,
and he was a discovery. I mean, I just adored his food.
We met him at a little cocktail reception, and we said, you know what? We interviewed him right then and there and said, we need to come back and have lunch, which we did, which consumed several hours.
That was so good.
But we still made our plane, and we thanked Thomas for a wonderful lunch and dining experience at 16 in Chicago, and if you go there, you can be assured you'll get exactly the same thing.
With the martinis. Here you go. Yeah. Is it on?
Go.
Well, I love meeting new chefs, and I'm particularly excited because this one has such a reputation, not only among diners, but among other chefs. Thomas Lentz is the executive chef of 16, which is, of course, on the 16th floor of Trump Tower in Chicago. And I'm so happy to meet you, Chef.
Pleasure to meet both of you as well. It's nice to have you guys in for the weekend.
I'd like to be here for more meals, actually, and that's going to be on the schedule. Is it incorrect to say that you are what I might describe as an intellectual chef?
I would say that that's probably true. I happen to get a degree in philosophy, and I think that that's something that I want to do and imbibe into my cooking. I think it's important that you have a reason for what you do, anything that you do, and I want to make sure that that comes across in my cooking.
Well, so you started out as a philosophy student, and how did you get into cooking, and where have you cooked to this point?
Well, I cooked my way through high school and college. It was one of those jobs I always had. I started cooking when I was 14, and it was something that I did originally just for kind of pocket money. And it was something that I realized as I was continuing that I really had a passion for. I started to go on. Both my parents were educators, so originally I was planning on becoming a professor of philosophy. Started down that road and realized I was actually having more fun in the restaurants than I was in school anymore. So I told myself I'd give myself 3 years to figure out if I really wanted to cook. Left school and have not looked back since. I've had the pleasure to really work with some really great people. I was executive sous chef for John Joe Ho at the Everest for several years. Moved overseas to work with Kevin Thornton, who's a two Michelin star chef in Ireland, as well as the Rue brothers briefly, and then came back to work for Joel Robuchon in Las Vegas. Spent off and on 7 years with Mr. Robuchon, with a little stint with Mike Tusk out in California as well.
They're all people I love.
Yeah, you know what? I was very lucky. I'm a big believer that you know, if you want to be great, you need to work with great people. And I had the opportunity to learn from some of the best.
Well, now, if you have two Michelin stars here, what is it like being in Trump Tower in the middle of this election campaign?
Can you hold this?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, to be perfectly honest, the election campaign has been a little difficult for us. I think there's a lot of people that that, you know, have very strong opinions one way or the other. We really try to focus on what we're doing in the restaurant. I try not to make my meals a political statement, you know, as much as I possibly can. So, you know, I think what we try to do is focus on making sure that diners have a great experience here and that what we're doing relates to them.
Now, you have some interesting concepts that I'm not sure I get my head around altogether, such as I'm looking at your menu, and you have various ingredients and themes, and you're asking for, instead of a tasting menu, that the diners select these themes, and then you and your kitchen staff fill in the blanks. Explain this to me.
Sure. The way 16 has worked since I started here, actually, we wanted to put on a kind of evolving tasting menu format, something a little bit different than what's normally seen. And like I said, we try to imbibe an idea and a reason behind what we're doing. So each year we come up with a concept that's going to influence the entire year, and then we change that menu four times during the year. This year, the idea is the study of ingredients, a kind of a return to ingredients. So the way that we're looking at it is, we want to focus as a kitchen on only a few ingredients that that we think speak really truly of the moment, and then we want to show those in different formats throughout the menu. I'm a big believer in choice. I think that there's a lot of tasting menus now that kind of eschew the diner's own flavors and passions that they want to see in a meal. So we wanted to give the diner an opportunity to try several of these different ideas. Maybe you like asparagus, maybe you like game, maybe you don't. But if you want to, you can choose to see those ideas either singly or in a multitude of different preparations and techniques throughout the menu. And then we ask you to make four selections of about four different ingredients, study ingredients, and then we'll continue to add a couple, about four or five more of those ideas to your menu, so you have more of a tasting menu format.
Since she's mentioned ingredients, what are some of the hot ingredients in your head? I'm not talking about trendy, for this year that you really wanted to promote.
That's always a good question. You know, I'm kind of a classicist when it comes down to it. And especially in Chicago, what you get excited for are the things that you haven't seen in the longest time. So, you know, for us, you know, while it's technically spring right here, it really isn't. So we really are, you know, we're outside right now. It's a little chilly. You know, we really love to see the greens start to come back. So for us, you know, fiddlehead ferns is one of the things that I'm always really excited about when they arrive. I think it's the foraged ingredient that no one talked about before. Everything was foraged. I'm really, one of the things that I'm really excited about is I have a producer that's going to get me wild asparagus, European wild asparagus, which was something that the USDA eliminated from being transported in the United States several years ago. So I haven't seen it in the U.S. for about 5 years, and I actually have a guy who's growing it for me. So it's one of those things that I think a lot of people have almost forgotten about. So I'm quite excited about it.
Well, you said wild, but he's growing it. I mean, that's cultivated.
It's true. Wild, you can look at wild asparagus in two different formats. There's wild asparagus, which is simply just asparagus that grows in the wild. But there's a variety of European asparagus that's very, very thin. Almost looks like a small green shock of wheat. And they're considered wild asparagus, but they've been cultivated recently and in Europe for quite a while. But no one could really grow them in the United States for some reason, and we couldn't ship them back over. So now I finally got somebody that's able to produce what I want.
Well, when I lived in the Midwest, and I went to school in Ann Arbor, and then I worked in Indianapolis, everybody who was anybody had their own private morel patch, and they would go to their death without revealing it. Do you?
I have a couple of spots. I do. I both have a couple of spots. I grew up in Michigan, not far from Ann Arbor, actually, and I had a couple of spots when I was a kid that we used to go to. And now I have a couple of spots, actually, just south of the city that we can find it as well. So the nice thing is that I think we share a little bit more than we used to back in the day. So people are willing to take people on great little foraging trips. You know, there's Burton's maple syrup. Tim Burton is a great, great guy, and he'll happily take all of my cooks out to go get ramps and morels whenever they're available. So I think we've got the food community has kind of come together, and we share those spots a little bit, which is nice.
This is a hard question, that it always is, but I want our listeners to get some sort of idea about both your style and your passion in cooking. Could you pick two dishes on your current menu that probably will represent that to them?
Sure. Two dishes that I think really represent my style. First, we have a cold water langoustine dish. It's a product that I was able to use when I was living over in England, and I finally found a producer that fishes in the very, very cold waters of South Africa that allows me to get beautiful, beautiful langoustine, something that a lot of people don't see. And we pair this with some very pressurized cooked white onions to make a very kind of a modern take on a sous vide. This is paired with a little parsley foam and then a very deep red wine lobster sauce. For me, this speaks a lot of, in a couple of different ways. One, it speaks to kind of the classicism that I believe is important and technique that's important in cooking that a lot of people have lost. That red wine sauce is something that is based off a technique that Mr. Robichon taught me. And it's something that, you know, if, without the detail and the real care to make it, you can. It's very easy to make a sauce that's not perfectly well-rounded and really balances the lobster or the langoustine. And you have to pay attention to it. You have to do all the tiny steps to make it great. And also the pairing with the ingredient itself, something that, while not local, it is something that I think people need to see. It's a fantastic ingredient that not a lot of people get an opportunity to see. So it's something that we spend a lot of time sourcing, and we're very proud to have. The other one kind of mirrors this is the variations of veal that we have on the menu. I've worked with Sylvia Perez from Four Story Hills Farms for a long time.
She
produces the best veal in the world, really. And it's, for me, it's very important to have that connection. I've been buying from her for almost 20 years. And to have that connection with her and be able to use her product, I think, is very important.
You know, one of the things that we respond to so well is when you meet a talented, high-profile chef, and they turn out to be the greatest mensch around. I mean, a really decent, wonderful human being. And I think everybody would agree with us that our next guest, Curtis Duffy of Grace, chef proprietor of Grace, is just that.
But he's kind of on top of his game. I mean, he only has a little Michelin 3 stars. And he won his first James Beard Awards for Best Chef.
Great Lakes, isn't it?
I think so. You'll have to look it up for yourself, but I'm pretty sure it is. And we didn't catch up with him at the ceremony, but we caught up with him on the phone just a couple of days later, and it was a pleasure to talk to him, and you'll enjoy the conversation, I feel sure.
Curtis Duffy winning the best restaurant, of the best chef, rather, of the Great Lakes. You thought all those people raving and cheering and applauding were for you at the Beard Awards, but you know what? It was those two beautiful young ladies you had on your arm.
Absolutely. You know, I brought my daughters to the awards that night.
And how old were they, 7 and 9?
7 and 10.
7 and 10, because they're very close in age to our grandchildren. And
they
were starstruck, weren't they?
They were pretty excited to be there. I mean, I was going to bring them last year, but I thought they were a little too young, and I was really excited to be able to bring them this year. It was kind of a last-minute decision, but nonetheless, they were really excited to be there.
Well, they were with all the big boys and girls of the press. I mean, they were in presence of some important company, like Anne Haig from On the Menu Radio, for example.
Yeah, I love children, so I mean, I guess I fussed a little bit over them, but I guess this is your brand of take your children to work, huh?
I mean, yeah, it works. I'm not married anymore, and I get them on the weekends, so. It's important for me to start, now that they're of the age, to really start to include them into my world and you know, get their mindset wrapped around with what I do. The younger, and that, but now they're starting to grow up a little bit more. More important for me to make sure that they're embraced in my world so they feel a part of what I do.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about what you do. I mean, you have a very interesting background and resume. Let's start. Make sure everybody knows that the restaurant we're talking about is Grace in Chicago, and it's the restaurant that I keep trying to get into, we can't get into. Is there a secret to how you get into Grace?
I mean, it's a matter of just being flexible. Honestly, it's a matter of being flexible with some of the dates. If you call the restaurant and you're set on one specific time and one specific date, might be a little bit more challenging for you. If you're a little bit more flexible, we can try to always wiggle you in for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like some people do with the El Bulli when it was going. They would wait to get their reservation confirmed, and then they would buy a plane ticket.
Absolutely, yeah. You know,
do you remember when we went to that restaurant Hiramatsu in Paris?
Yes,
and it was the fastest ascent to two Michelin stars that had ever happened.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we gave our concierge at our hotel the challenge of getting us a luncheon reservation, and he did. And
last minute.
I have a feeling what he did was convince the ownership of Hiramatsu that they should cancel somebody else's reservation.
Yeah, I think
so,
they did.
So we could get in.
And that's amazing.
That's pretty extreme, but he earned a sizable, shall we say, a gratuity from the happy couple who got to go.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure.
Anyhow, Curtis, I never would have guessed in a million years that you came out of Columbus, Ohio.
I know, right? It's crazy.
I have relatives that live all over that part of Ohio.
Well, you have to remember, it's the centerpiece of fine dining, a place called Wendy's.
Yeah, yeah, that's
exactly.
True. But you grew up, though, someplace else, right?
I grew up in Columbus. I grew outside of Columbus.
Uh-huh. But you ended up going west at some point, right?
You know, I spent my first 13 years of my childhood in Colorado Springs, and then I moved east.
I see. Now that I know you just a little bit, I understand how well you would have interacted with Charlie Trotter and also with Grant Achatz. I mean, you are, above all, a very committed, dedicated, and disciplined chef, are you not?
I am, yes, absolutely.
And something of a perfectionist?
You can say that. I strive to better myself every single day, personally and professionally.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, Charlie was all of that, too.
And, absolutely.
And you talk about drive. Look at what Grant has done.
It's amazing, right?
Yes.
I mean, what Grant and Nick Kakonis have done with the whole Alinea umbrella is truly amazing.
Right. I don't know what do you think you're going to, what do you think is going to happen with the reopening with a different concept?
I don't know. Honestly, I'm not sure. I don't know too much about the concept, the direction that they're going, and I've only read a few articles, but, you know, I'm sure it's take off like a rocket, like it did when it opened.
People are going to pay attention. Were you still in the press room when Grant was talking after accepting his award for best restaurant?
I wasn't. I stepped out.
I was sitting in the back interviewing Curtis Stone.
Uh-huh.
And for the first time, after 2 hours of being in the press room, I could actually hear myself talk.
Oh, wow. Was that quiet, huh?
And then we realized what was happening was somebody important was talking in the auditorium, and everybody in the press room was quiet except us. And it was Grant.
That's amazing.
And it was totally amazing because he was the only person in the whole evening who got hearing room.
Yeah.
Everybody just paid attention. It gives you an idea what an important influence this young man has been.
Absolutely.
And we've seen him grow, haven't we, sweetheart?
Oh, yes.
We've seen him grow through meeting him at the World's 50 Best Restaurant Awards for every year and talking to him. And he's such a thoughtful guy, which it would not at first appear that he is.
Oh, I think he's brilliant, actually.
Yeah, very, very smart gentleman.
Yeah, now, your restaurant, is it tasting menu only?
That is correct, yes. We offer two menus.
Okay, and for reservations, allow at least a 3-week window in advance?
Well, we do open the reservation 2 months out to the day.
2 months, all right.
Yeah,
wow.
2 months out.
Well, that tells you something. Your menu is divided into flora and fauna.
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah, and is the flora to be mingled with the... You can't mingle flora and fauna? I mean, is it do vegetarian or non?
Yeah, I mean, we don't encourage it, but we're not going to say no, of course. You know, the menu is designed to really flow as a single menu. The flora itself is heavily focused on seasonal vegetables, grains, seeds, nuts, herbs. Those are everything. It's not vegetarian to be vegetarian, and it certainly can be vegan if somebody chooses to have that option as well.
Uh-huh.
But it's really just focused about the ingredients in the season. Now, the fauna is the same focus, but it does have lighter seafood and protein offerings throughout the menu.
Uh-huh.
But also heavily focused on vegetables that are in season.
Right. You do things, though. This is how you say you like to eat. You eat very cleanly.
Absolutely. Yeah, for me, this is a personality cuisine. It's ingredients that I enjoy eating on a daily basis. It's things that are at the height of their season and the best quality that we could possibly get from our farmers.
Yeah, well, you have, I think, a number of really superb suppliers for your restaurant, right?
Absolutely. We deal with, on average, about 120 different, farmers, fishmongers, foragers, on a weekly basis.
Right. Is there any dish that you would be able to use that would you could describe so that our listeners, they like to hear details, they like to think through and develop dishes. Is there one or two you might run us through?
Sure. I could talk about the crab dish that has been with me for quite some time, dating back to my time at Avenues.
Oh, yeah, that's a while ago. How many years has that been?
I left Avenues in 2011.
I thought it was longer than that. That it closed.
It was about a year before we opened Greece.
I see. Okay. And but Graham Elliott left there a long time ago, right?
He left in 2007.
Okay, yeah, I knew that.
And I took over early 2008 and ran it for the next few years.
I see. Okay, so tell us about the crab dish.
So it is an Alaskan king crab that's lightly poached in a citrus stock, and then it's chilled. It's served, it's kind of served in a stemless martini glass with pickled cucumbers, cucumber juice, sudachi puree, some herbs, trout roe. And then on top of the glass lays a beautiful, really thin layer of sugar.
Wow.
And we build on top of that little pane of sugar some of the same ingredients that are in the bottom of the bowl. So there's a little bit more trout roe, there's sudachi puree, there's some red jalapeno curls, there's a little bit more herbs, tofurkey. And then the guests are really instructed to kind of break through and kind of incorporate that sugar into the dish to kind of balance everything else out with the pickled cucumbers.
Oh, it sounds sublime. How about another dish, one more?
That's probably the only dish that really stays on the menu for its entirety that it's been here. Everything else changes seasonally very quickly. We rotate the menu, four times a year. But even within the seasons, I like to think of food as a microclimate. So 52 seasons out of the year, we're thinking about food. It's really about four times a year. We got to think of it on a weekly basis because that's really how fast things change for us.
Now, let's take it a different way. What are you doing with peas? English peas are now in season, so you're doing something special with them, I'm sure.
Yeah, so we're doing English peas with huckleberries. Let's see, a little bit of sour cream, yogurt. What else are we serving with it? That's about it, really. We try to keep it very simple, but the presentation is pretty exotic, if you will.
Right. There aren't that many Asian dishes, I mean, influenced dishes on the menu, but you must, if you've worked with Charlie Trotter, you must have a lot of that in your background, too. I mean, he was such good buddies with Tetsuya.
Well, I think my food is, I like I said, it's a personality cuisine for me, and when I think about food, when I think about flavors, I think about things that I like to eat. What are the influences that that I like to eat on my days off or when I'm able to go out to dinner? And those are some of, like, the Asian restaurants, you know, Thai food, Japanese food is a huge influence on my menu, or the way that I cook. Not necessarily on my menu, but the way that I cook. You know, they're just very subtle notes, very clean, very minimal fat-driven menu. Vietnamese, just like really clean, herbaceous notes throughout the menu.
Yes, and there are some ingredients I really haven't seen on anybody else's menu. Of course, Vietnamese herbs, but you never see sweet woodruff, for example, on anybody's menu.
I know, it's pretty hard to come by.
Uh-huh.
But we do use it on our rhubarb dish currently.
Yeah, do you forage?
I used to, I would say, my time at Avenues, I would forage myself a little bit more, but I don't have the time to do it anymore. It's too busy. I do love getting out into the woods and just walking around and finding things, but, you know, I just don't have the time to do it anymore. So we have some people that do that for us.
Now, you say that one of your mentors, and in the documentary about you and your restaurant, you still refer to your home economics teacher.
Uh-huh.
That's a stretch.
I think more so my personal life, maybe not so much on the food side, but, you know, the ability to be able to speak with Ruth on a weekly basis and talk to her and just, you know, still have that connection with her from my childhood is very important to me.
Well, you speak to her on a weekly basis.
Absolutely, yeah. We touch base either via through text message or on the phone conversation.
Well, she must be very proud, huh?
You could say that. She's really excited and very proud of what the restaurant has become and what I've become as a grown man, I guess.
Now, when you're thinking of future developments, are you considering, like, multiplying your restaurants, or what do you see in your future?
I think it's important to continue to grow the brand, and I would love to be able to grow the brand with a restaurant that is something that a diner could go to two or three times a week, you know, and be less adventurous as Grace is, but certainly have the same ideals and the same philosophy behind it as, you know, finding the best ingredients and using the best ingredients the height of its season and be able to give those to diners two or three times a week. That would be amazing for me.
So is it a little bit like Danny Meyer's concept where he has a group of restaurants and he said, my ambition is to have somebody dine in one of my restaurants every night of the week?
That's a great philosophy for sure. I mean, I would love to have a handful of restaurants that would people could do that and would feel comfortable doing. But Grace is always going to be like my baby. It's always going to be my mothership restaurant. It's like, it's my brand. We built the restaurant so we could build other restaurants, but have people know us for Grace.
Well, I don't know if you know anybody, a principal in that restaurant, if you could put in a good word for me.
I'm sure I know somebody.
What do you think Charlie would say?
Oh, Charlie!
Looking down on what you've achieved. What do you think he would say?
I don't know. I think there's part of him that would probably be really proud. I think, you know, I think he deep down inside, I think he's proud of everybody that left his restaurant and went on to do something great. Because I think that's, you know, we give to our staff. We constantly mentor. We constantly train. We want these chefs and young sommeliers and wait staff to go on and do great, amazing things when they leave us. So, speaking for Charlie, I'm sure he's really excited for everybody that left his underneath his shadow to go on and do great things, as I would be myself.
Right. So you have the teacher gene as well.
I do. I think it's, yeah, I think it becomes, it's a very natural thing as a chef to teach and want to make that person that stands beside you better than you are.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that, as I said, you thought you were the star, but did you realize how happy everybody was when you won, by the way?
I did. No, it happened so quickly. You know, I don't know that.
Oh, yeah. And the other one they were really excited about was, of course, Jonathan Waxman. How many years did he go without winning anything, huh?
I think.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think Alan Shire got the loudest shout.
He did. Alan Shire is just a fabulous guy. You don't do a lot, you don't hang around a lot with the chefs in their chef groups like Julina's and all those things, do you?
No, I don't. I don't.
I can't picture you doing that, but especially it gets pretty wild.
yeah, I'm kind of, I'm a little old for that now. I spent my time, I've always had my head down and been very dedicated to my craft and focused on what I do, and I continue down that road because I continue to want to be better every single day, and I continue to want to grow my brand and my business. And I think if I'm out in the streets, you know, doing things that are very notorious for partying and hanging out late night, then it's not the right direction for me to be.
Yeah, well, I can't picture you. I mean, it was really a wild scene in Lima when we were there with the Julina's thing. Oh, that was incredible. But I really respect you and your dedication to your craft and to your art, I might say. And I can't wait to taste your food.
Yeah, we'll
see you next year in Chicago for sure.
Curtis, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us.
And don't go away, because there's lots more on the menu after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, moving right along, even before we launched into the actual Beard Awards, the very night we got there, we found a restaurant called Intro that we really loved. And here is our discussion with another great find, their executive chef, Stephen Galanders. Stephen Galanders, you certainly have done a lot of traveling around, but you've also devoted a lot of your experience to, can I assume that Jean-Georges Van Gerichten is a mentor?
Oh, without question. I mean, a lot of the traveling I did actually came because of the job that I had with him prior to this one. I was the executive chef for his corporation about 3.5 years.
Start with, I was born in Los Angeles, because that's good.
Okay, do you want me to go from born in Los Angeles to working with Jean-Georges, or?
Sure, yeah, why not?
Okay, sure. All right, ready?
Yeah, this is part of the conversation.
Okay, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Clearly this is not my forte. But, you know, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, which is, you know, a very international city as is. And my mother's Filipino, my father's American, my wife's actually Korean, so there's a lot of diversity within my family. And then, so I came from a very diverse background. And then working with Jean-Georges and then traveling with him, you know, we opened restaurants around the world.
He's invented fusion, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, I could not have asked for a better teacher and mentor and just, you know, counselor, to be honest.
Your time in the Far East, I mean, in your bio, I don't remember where I got the bio, but it just says things like, and while he was there, he proposed to his wife. It didn't say that, you know, your wife was Asian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we actually, so when I left Las Vegas, so the real estate market bottomed out in Las Vegas, and I bought a house at a very young age. And then that became, you know, a bad financial investment.
Oh, didn't I remember that? Everything went under.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, I was only like 23 years old, and I had this mortgage now that I couldn't, you know, that I couldn't cover. And I've been dating this girl for a long time. Her name is Sun. She was graduating from school, and she was losing her student visa. I was losing this house. I was in Vegas for 7 years, which is, you know, way too long than I had planned. So I decided to just kind of drop everything.
Uh-huh.
And I packed my stuff, and I just was like, I'm going to go travel for as long as possible. And I flew to New York first, and I gave John George my notice personally.
Uh-huh.
And I remember him being completely bad, you know, just shocked by that. My wife was actually the one who recommended it. She said, you need to go to New York, and you need to quit face-to-face.
Uh-huh.
And it was the best decision I ever made.
Because that meant you could come back.
Exactly. Not only that, like, it set such a precedent for, like, how much I really cared about it. You know, he had 2,000 employees. If you get a phone call or an email, that's what you get.
Yeah.
And the fact that I took it upon myself to fly to New York for a day from Las Vegas, I think, really said a lot. And I think it was reflective of how much I really cared. And then, you know, my wife moved back to Korea, and I traveled to Asia for about 8 months. And
do you know Korean food well?
You know, I want to say yes until my mother-in-law cooks for me, and then I realize how much I don't know about it.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things that if I'm cooking for non-Korean, then I seem like I'm better at it than I really am.
I see.
But I love Korean food. And
yeah, well, did you read that Koreatown, the book that just came out?
I have not.
Oh, it's good. It's very good. And, yeah, and I've been watching Korean food and people's, Americans' taste for it bloom for a while now. And,
No, absolutely. I agree. I've seen that. The whole thing has really got a lot of steam, and it's still going.
Looking in my crystal ball, I see a Korean restaurant in your future somewhere.
But, I would tell you right now, my wife probably would love that.
But in the meantime, let's pop back to where you are now, which is in Chicago, and is a restaurant called Intro.
Yeah, what's that concept again?
And you were supposed to go and then leave, but you stayed.
Why did they suddenly shift their concept to accommodate you as a permanent executive chef there?
Well, no, I didn't see it coming. And if I had a crystal ball, you know, I would have known better. But, I mean, if all things had gone as quote-unquote planned, we would be in L.A. opening a restaurant now. That would, you know, we're slated for a late summer opening. And the problem was with Jean George, he's got a huge network and a huge empire. But he doesn't have a lot of skin on the West Coast. The farthest west he is Las Vegas. So we're having a hard time developing a lot of buzz around getting going because of my resume. And I had a friend who was like, hey, have you heard of Intro? And I was like, of course I have. And he's like, you should do that and boost the restaurant's name is SKY. And it's actually my wife's initials.
It's what?
And SKY.
Okay, that's nice initials, yeah.
And we were having a lot of issues kind of getting it off the ground in terms of, like, you know, generating PR, marketing, everything. My friend's like, you need to go to, you know, get in Chicago and try to get into Intro. And he hooked me up with Rich, and I had a conversation with him. I came out and did a tasting. And right after the tasting was done, he was talking about my inspiration, you know, what I like to do, what I like to cook. And I was talking about my travels, you know, going to Asia a lot, how that's reflected in my cuisine. And then he was asking me about, you know, Europe, and why don't you go to Europe more? And I said, you know, by the time we realized and had the time to go, the money we had set aside was for the restaurant. We weren't able to make that change. And then right then and there, he decided to send my wife and I to Europe for 8 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing that Rich does. He just changes people's lives, you know. He just has the ability to do so, and he takes advantage of it. So we went to Europe, and 14 pounds later, I came back to Chicago. And we were, you know, planning my tenure at Intro. And up until that point, I was the fourth chef. The previous three chefs had all done tasting menus.
Uh-huh.
And the problem was the restaurant that we wanted to open was not a tasting menu restaurant. It was an a la carte restaurant. So I was trying to kind of force a square peg into a round hole by making my menu a tasting. And I was talking to our general manager, Sue, and she was like, well, why are you doing a tasting menu? Just do a la carte. And I was like, is that even an option? She's like, yeah. So we went from, I think it was a 6-course tasting at the time,
uh-huh,
to a 27 item a la carte menu in like 10 days.
Wow. Now, I mean, but let me be clear on this. You are there for the long haul in Intro.
I am. I am now the chef partner there.
Okay.
But at the time, you know, I was just supposed to be one of the
right,
you know,
yeah, right.
one of the visiting chefs.
But
and I think
you're going to be supervising. They're still going to have chefs rotating in and out, like a Largy is leaving, and who comes
right.
in next?
You know, we're going to have a very strategic way to announce that,
okay.
but we're going to really kind of, you know, we're really going to push the boundaries on really getting, like, craftsmen and artisans and really, you know, people who are really isolated at doing things. And by having Intro in the current format that it's in, we don't necessarily have to have a chef that has a specific menu. We can bring in, you know, the best pastry chef from France and just have, like, this incredible dessert menu that works in tandem with the Intro.
That's
and
exciting.
Yeah, it's really great. We can bring in, like, you know, a handful of noodle master from Beijing and reformat the menu to be that without having them commit to providing a five-course meal or, you know, we really open the opportunity to bring different types of masters of their crafts in while people can still come in and still have just dinner, you know. You don't have to commit to buying a ticket and waiting for 3 more months for the menu to change and come back.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I mean,
I do, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
I mean, we enjoyed our meal there, and we were talking to Jessica about some of her signature dishes that she developed, but you have developed a lot of dishes as well. What are some of those
Certainly.
To give us an idea? I mean, do you cook like Jean-Georges? I mean, he's a genius, isn't he?
Oh, he makes me realize how much more I have to do, you know, and the company. I actually spoke to the VP yesterday. They have, like, you know, 6 more openings this year. They just could not be busier. And it's just so inspiring. And I heard a quote that said, you know, work until your idols become your rivals. And it just really motivates me to one day, like, you know, stand at that tier and compete, you know?
Right.
And I don't work for them anymore, but it continues to motivate me. And it could not be a better scenario.
Could you tell us, or our listeners, I guess, a dish or two that kind of describes your interests cuisine-wise?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of it's an interesting question because I'm not 100% familiar with the Chicago palate. I opened the Pump Room, ironically, for Jean-Georges 5 years ago in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that was my first foray into the Chicago dining scene. But I don't like to cook for myself. You know, you have to cook for the people and the guests and for the people who want to come in and eat. And, you know, everywhere is different. So, you know, you have to kind of reformat your style. But the good thing about Chicago is a proper food city and they know what they like. And thankfully, I like what they like. So things have changed slightly. You know, we don't have the benefit of having the produce that you'll get in California or some of the farm relationships
right.
that I had in New York. You know, and the seasons are quite different.
I mean, it's interesting that, I mean, it used to be a steak and potatoes town, but out of that, you got, Charlie Trotter, you got,
Grant Atkins, and, you know,
Grant
Curtis
Atkins,
Duffy, I mean, yeah,
yeah
sure.
Curtis Duffy, I mean, look, especially on the more modernist side, it's kind of amazing to come out of that town, I think.
Oh, for sure, but not only that, now you have restaurants like Parachute. You know,
yeah, I've not been there yet.
I mean, you know, and then
what's that like?
The Chicago scene. So not to go back to this, but you know, it's a husband and wife team, and she's Korean, and they're really cooking exactly what they want to make, and it's not cut and dry. You know, it couldn't be farther from meat and potatoes. Like there's things like that are fermented. You know, there's kimchi, and there's you know, interesting ingredients coming from Asia that they're using. And they're highly successful. They have a great following, and I really think that Chicago takes pride in the fact that they're a food city, and they support people doing that, and it really inspires me to cook for them.
Yeah, and you know, the 50 best restaurants is moving from London to New York now, and they're preceding the awards night itself. It used to be a one big splash. Event, but they're preceding it with Korean dinners. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
So I thought that was interesting. I think there are three of them.
I love that.
Yeah, I think there are three of them.
And as a chef, it opens up so many more opportunities to do other things besides putting a steak next to a potato and, you know,
yeah,
and charging accordingly for it.
That stuff I can't pronounce. Guachang or what is it?
Oh, gochujang?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to do with it. I keep it in my refrigerator.
Yeah, trust me. It won't go bad.
I just need it.
I have a bucket in my fridge right now that I probably had for too long.
Anyhow, so, Robert, did you want to ask a question before I sort of shut you out of the discussion here.
Well, no. You know what happened? I missed the trend of the conversation because I had to go downstairs and let in the UPS man who had a delivery for us. So I'm a little lost. I'm sure you covered the subject, and if there's any difficulty in any event, there's a website directly to intro, Stephen?
Yes, justchicago.com. We'll answer any and all questions you might have. Obviously, you can make a reservation there. You can see the current menu. You can see what's in the pipeline for things coming up and events. And the next chef we announce will definitely be on that website. And obviously, you know, we have Twitter accounts and we have Instagram feeds. And there's a lot of ways to always know, you know, what's happening with the restaurant. And we're really excited for people to find out more about it.
Yeah, it's a happening place, isn't it?
Everybody also, listeners, this is the last word. Everybody said, this Stephen, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
and there's room for conflict in the kitchen.
You know what? But you probably didn't talk to my team.
there's room for harmony in the kitchen too. So I'm sure whoever comes to work with you next and the one after that and the one after that, I'm sure you'll have a great time, and it'll be a great, fun place for people to go dine.
I hope so.
We agree, I'm sure, that there's a Korean restaurant somewhere in your future.
There may be.
Exactly how far down the road, we're not sure. But when you start planning that, be sure to come back and talk to us and let us know about it. Because
oh, yeah, we'll have the kochujang ready. I'll tell you that right now.
Great. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope the weather in Chicago is better than it was when we were there.
It certainly is. So thank you for taking the bad weather with you.
Great. That's good to know. Well, Stephen, again, hopefully we'll meet up, and we'll be certainly back in Chicago next year for the Beards.
All right. Well, hopefully I'll see you before then. But until that,
that would be good.
Pleasure, and thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it, you guys.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And moving right on to our final segment, boy, did we have some of the nicest receptions, great food and drink and charming people to talk to. We really enjoyed Swift and Sons, and so we caught up with the chef, Chris Pandel, or was it Pandel, and also with the owner, Philip Walters, and we dragged them out onto a very windy terrace and recorded these interviews.
And we also, on the same windy terrace, interviewed somebody we've been chasing a long time, Stephanie Izzard from Girl and the Goat. And is it Baby Goat?
And a
baby very soon on its way.
Exactly, Stephanie. If you're still not delivered, it should be soon.
Yeah, and Peter's a good name for a son. And Anne's a good name for a daughter. here are the guys from Swift and Sons and Stephanie Izzard from Girl and the Goat to finish out today's program. Now, Swift and Sons is exactly where, Philip?
We're located in the Fulton Market District in Chicago's west side of the West Loop area.
And this used to be an area that was stockyards and the meat trade for half of a nation,
for the most part, yeah. We're on Fulton Market, which is full of the meat packers of Chicago. It's the northern version thereof. A lot of the stockyards were further down south for a long time.
And how did this is a project that's been up and running, Philip? I think for about a year, you said. And tell us a little bit about the background, because you had some partners in the venture.
Yeah, we've come together now. It's been just over 3 years in planning, and there's been a lot of different parties involved. Sterling Bay were the developers that took on the building and built the separate building off to the side. The cold storage building was classically, as Chef Pandel alluded to, a storage facility or a meatpacking refrigeration building for almost 100 years. And when we took it over, there were stalagmites and stalactites of ice literally throughout. They had to melt the whole thing. It took over a year to melt down. And then we had the privilege to come together, Boca Restaurant Group and Be Hospitality Co., Chef Pandel, myself, our partner John Ross, and then from Boca, Rob and Kevin, who had such great restaurants as Girl and the Goat and Boca, and then, of course, with our collaboration of Belena before this, we just had the great synergy from before and worked together to put this restaurant out. Under Chef Pandel's oversight and overseeing the menu, putting forth foodstuffs that are not just steaks, but just great chef creations.
Now, I'm going to interject here that this owner you're talking to has red hair and he has a tie on with gold duckies, rubber duckies on it.
You get a chance to explain that, but only quickly.
My daughter's 18 months. She loves Ernie, Sesame Street. That's all I got.
Tell us about the food concept that lies behind what you're doing in this really huge restaurant, lots of seats. What are you doing for them that really attracts them to come here?
Well, Chicago is still a meat and potatoes town, and we are a nod to a classic Chicago steakhouse. And with that, we take some liberties and take the menu in a direction that's a little more seasonal, where appropriate. We still have some of the mainstays, you know, great prime steaks, amazing shellfish and seafood. And then we're allowed to have a little bit of freedom with the seasonality, shopping through the farmers markets, allowing the menu to change kind of on a whim, you know, based on what's available and kind of brought to our back door.
Now you have a particularly whimsical dish for today's special luncheon associated with James Beard, previous awardees and nominees, but just and Peter indulged in at least 24. Tell us what that is and how you invented it.
So we're serving a dish that we're referring to as a carpetbagger oyster, and it's a reverse of a traditional steak topper. So you would get a carpetbagger steak in order to have fried oysters on top, and so we decided to take the oysters and leave them fresh and just top them with the beef tartare. So you've got pickled mustard seeds, an egg yolk jam, a really finely minced beef tartare. So it's kind of a nod to an old school dish with just a really slight twist to it.
Now I'm gonna fight you just a little bit here, because the carpetbagger steak was not invented in Chicago.
No,
it was invented in Australia, and I used to love them. And it was a fillet, and you cut the fillet open, and you put the oysters in the
inside,
fillet,
yeah.
And then you cooked it.
Yeah.
And so you sort of riffed on that.
Yeah, very much. So.
Some people would say stole that.
I'm okay with stealing.
Absolutely. All good
artists
steal.
That's right.
Chef, what is your background? Where did you come from?
I came from Riverside, Illinois. I cooked in Chicago, went to school at Johnson & Wales in Providence, Rhode Island, moved to New York for a handful of years, and worked under a gentleman named Andrew Carmelini and Daniel Ballud. Yeah, and then back to Chicago in the early 2000s and worked for a gentleman named Rick Tremonto for about 8 years. And that's when I met John Ross, our other business partner, and Philip, myself, and John opened the Bristol in, 2008?
September 23rd,
08. Jeez, yeah. 8 years ago. So that's my background.
This food world is such a small world. Yes, I mean, those are all our buddies, too. It's really great. If you're putting this out over the internet, people are going to be coming to Chicago and they're going to want some details. Where do they get the details on this place, and who actually comes here?
Well, hopefully everyone comes here. Where do they get the details? Online, www.swiftandsonschicago.com or www.coldstoragechicago.com are the tandem websites for 1000 West Fulton in Chicago, Swift and Sons.
And
you can also go to the corporate group websites, BocaRestaurantGroup.com or BeHospitalityCo.com, with all of the different restaurants that we own.
Now, we have to ask, is there duck on the menu?
Currently, right now?
No, there's no.
There's duck on the tie, but not yet on the menu.
No.
Now, you have an interesting tenant right close by. Interestingly enough, they're the tenant of a property that's about half a mile from where we live in Pittsburgh. And they have made an enormous difference. The Googlers have made an enormous difference to the Pittsburgh dining scene. Have they done the same here in Chicago?
Very much so. There's, I believe, 3,000 employees upstairs. I think they've taken on somewhere between 150,000 and 200,000 square feet. You know, they're quite well versed when it comes to dining, and they have great expectations. So it pushes us and challenges us to meet that man.
So probably with 3,000 Googlers, you better make a reservation if you want to come here. Sweetheart, do you have any other questions for these fine gentlemen, or should we let them go back to work?
No, I mean, this is a big discovery for us, because I never even knew. Somebody said you have to come to the Swift & Sons party, and I said, who?
Exactly.
And now I know, and now I would recommend anybody listening to this to come, and I thank you for your hospitality.
Oh, no. It's our pleasure, believe me. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you both. Thank you so much.
I've been trying to get an interview with Stephanie Azar for so long, I even forgot how long it was. She's been busy. You know, she's about to have a baby in 24 days. But here we are, and we just sampled your fabulous shrimp toast. But first I want to mention your restaurants, plural now. Tell us about those.
Sure. We have Girl and the Goat that opened 6 years ago, Little Goat about 3 years old, and then we just opened Duck Duck Goat 5 weeks ago. So three in the goat family now.
Why the duck, duck, goat? You're adding something different to the menu?
Well, it's Chinese food. And so my husband's idea, we were actually just laying in bed one day, and he always has all these ideas that go in one ear and out the other for me. And he just said duck, duck, goat. And I thought it was clever and funny and just kind of captured that it's going to be a fun restaurant and also the Chinese theme. So,
are you originally from Chicago?
Yeah, I was actually born in Evanston. My whole family's from Chicago, and I moved to Connecticut on my first birthday, so I didn't grow up here, but I've been back since 2000, but I think it was always where I was meant to live, so it feels like home.
I often wondered, because, I mean, I talk to so many women chefs that always talk about the struggle. You, like, were immediately accepted. Is it your personality, your food? I mean, you were like welcomed into the whole chef network immediately. Why?
I don't know. I think I've always worked well with all the, you know, the men in the kitchen, and just kind of, I like to think of myself as a strong chef, not a strong for a female chef. And, you know, sometimes can be challenges, and I think for any women in the kitchen, but it's just about food and focus, what we all love, and not necessarily whether you're a man or woman.
Tell me about your affection for goats.
My affection for goats. My last name in French is Izard, and it's a type of mountain goat that lives in the Pyrenees Mountains. So that's where the whole goat thing came from. And then we decided to find a goat farm. We use Kilgus Farm for all of our goat meat and all the restaurants. We get about 15, now with three restaurants, probably about 20 whole goats a week. And we learned that we loved goat meat, too.
We actually eat a lot of goat. We have a purveyor that gets us goat's liver.
Oh, yeah. We use, of course, all our goats have the liver, so we make a goat liver mousse, goat pate with it that I think surprises people how deliciously rich and awesome it is.
No, I'm crazy about goat myself. But
I just cooked the whole thing.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Now, one of your signatures is being served at this reception today. It's your shrimp toast. Explain what that is.
Sure, we're doing shrimp toast. It's from the new menu at Duck Duck Goat. It's just one of the appetizers. We take white bread that we bake at Little Goat and smear it with kind of like a shrimp mousse. It's just shrimp ground up with some different aromatics and spices and just a tiny bit of like egg white and cream. Smear it on the toast, cook it in a whole bunch of butter, because in Chinese restaurants, usually you deep fry it, but I'd rather soak up the flavor of butter if we're going to soak up something. And then we top it with a little bit of fish sauce and spice aioli and some house fermented vegetables. So you get, like, the nice acidity, you get the richness, a little bit of crunch from the toast. And it's like the best grilled cheese you've ever had, but with shrimp on it.
I've eaten two pieces now, and I'm going to go back for more, so I can vouch for that. Now, are you up for any awards this year?
I'm not up for an award this year. I'm actually getting to present one this year. So I think it makes it a little less, yeah, I got one 2 years ago. And so this year I get to present for the Great Lakes. So it'll be with for one of my friends. So I'm excited to see who I get to put a award around their neck.
Now, you've worked in this Great Lakes district for a long time. The food scene here, the restaurant scene here, has changed so dramatically from when I lived in the Midwest.
Yeah, the food scene in Chicago, I think, is it's all the chefs that were here, there was everybody had one fine dining restaurant, sort of. And now each chef has multiple restaurants, are going more casual, and just kind of, I think it's a lot more fun, and all the chefs are really excited about being in the city, and there's this great camaraderie amongst all of us, and I think we all just want Chicago to be the best food city there is in the country, and I think it is. But don't tell all the New Yorkers on the other side of that door.
Now, how much effect has having the beards in Chicago had on the restaurant scene?
I think, you know, last year we all got to get together and the mayor came and announced it. And the fact that the city's gotten so behind the chef community, I think, is amazing. And it just makes us feel like, okay, yeah, you get it. Chicago is an amazing food scene. And having everybody come from the other cities and eat at our restaurants this weekend, and we get to show them, like, that Chicago is a great place to host such an amazing event. So I'm excited for this year and next year, and we'll see what happens after that.
Do you go to a lot of these food festivals? I can't even keep up with them. We're engaged with covering one after another, sometimes two at the same time. Do you do all that?
I do as many as I can. You know, I think it's at some point you need to kind of pick and choose which ones fit into your schedule and such. And all the food and wine events, you know, Aspen, I'm unfortunately going to miss this year. With the baby, the timing, of course, you know, the baby's a much bigger thing, but South Beach is really fun. I love, for us, it's a great way to go meet up with your chef friends from around the country and just, like, have a great weekend. And, you know, we're kind of working. I use little quotation marks with my fingers when I say that because it's really all about just, I think, meeting people that might not have been able to travel to your restaurant and seeing all your chef friends.
Who's your closest chef friend at this moment? Is it from Chicago or from someplace else?
Oh, that's tricky. I mean, a number of them. I think, like, Dale Taldy, who is on Top Chef with me, who I cooked with way back in the day, like, 12 years ago in Chicago. So, like, he's, like, a longtime chef friend. Last night, there was April Bloomfield was at my restaurant, and she's, like, one of my, you know, somebody that I always looked up to and was, like, and I still look up to and admire, but now we just, you know, I can just text her and say, hey, April, what's up? So it's really cool to have reached that point where now all these people I always looked up to are my friends. So there's a ton of them, and they're also amazing.
Well, it's very cool for me to be able to finally meet you. I've admired you from afar, and I'm really pleased that you had time to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you. So nice to meet you.
I think we have even a couple more interviews from Chicago that we'll including next week's program.
Right.
We did have a good time. It's not for nothing is it called Second City, I guess.
Right.
And of course, if you talk to Chicagoans, they'll say First City, where the hell is New York anyway? Who cares about that? But we didn't get into that argument. We just had a good time. It was had by all Chicagoans, and I guess Beard will be back next year, and we'll be back with them. And until then, in fact, until as soon as next week, we hope you'll join us then. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.